Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show across the nation. The phone number, if you would like to be a part of it, is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425, should you wish to call in. I want to talk about the California recall. California has, in 2003, had a recall of Gray Davis, who is deeply unpopular. And the Republicans rallied behind Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was already familiar to voters there, was not an intimidating soul to the left, because he was perceived as a moderate Republican. Republicans knew he was a Second Amendment supporting California Republican. They were happy to have a Republican. And Schwarzenegger won and was popular governor. Definitely moved left as he became governor. Alienated some Republicans, but he was able to be a Republican governor in California. Gavin Newsom is the governor of California after the lockdowns and the fires and the power outages and the like. Enough signatures were collected to have a recall of the governor, and it moves forward. Larry Elder, the conservative radio show host, a number of people called in or asked me online weeks ago, did I think Larry Elder had a shot? I said, I don't really think so. Kevin Falconer probably has the best shot because Kevin Falconer has really, the Republican Party is technically keeping hands off, but behind the scenes, they're pretty much helping Falconer. They think he's the best shot. So he's got a ground organization to help him that Elder does not. But there is polling that has come out that not only shows it's going to be very, very close on the issue of the recall, but also that among the people who are doing best, Larry Elder, in part because of his name ID, is doing best. And so he has a potential shot. He's only at like 18%, but it would be possible. Now, there are a couple of things to tell you. The Los Angeles Times polling has come out. And the Los Angeles Times polling has yes at 47% and no at 50%. Emerson polling, which is actually a pretty terrible pollster, has yes at 46% and no at 48%. And KABC and Survey USA have a poll that has yes at 51 and no at 40, an 11 percentage point lead. Now, the result of this is that the yes, remove Gavin Newsom line is now ahead in the polling average by 2%. In the LA Times Berkeley IGS poll, which probably was the most detailed poll, 3,266 likely voters spread out in a compact amount of time, no was ahead by 3 percentage points. So if you take the Berkeley poll, the Berkeley LA Times poll, then Gavin Newsom would win. Essentially, here's what happens. Voters are going to be asked two questions. Should Gavin Newsom be recalled, yes or no? If they say no, that's the end of their ballot. If they say yes, they immediately then go to the next question of who should replace him. And it is a daunting list of candidates. The following list contains the name and ballot designation and party preference of each person entitled to votes in the recall. Holly Beatty, John Drake, Patrick Kilpatrick, Jacqueline McGowan, Kevin Paffert, Armando Perez Serrato, Brandon Ross, Joel Ventresa, Daniel Watts, David Bramante, John Cox, Larry Elder, Kevin Falconer, Ron DeFuhrer, Ted Gaines, Sam Gallucci, David Hilberg, Caitlin Jenner, Kevin Kiley, Chauncey Kellens, Jenny LaRue, Steve Lodge, David Lorenzo, Diego Martinez, Daniel Mercury, Robert Newman III or the second, David Osi, Sarah Stevens, Denver Stoner, Joe Simon, Anthony Tremino, Nicholas Wildstar, Leo Zaki, Heather Collins, Dan Kapolovitz, Jeff Hewitt, Angeline, no last name, David Hanink, Kevin Call, Michael Loeb, Dennis Lucy, Jeremiah Markinick, David Moore, Adam Papagan, Dennis Richter, Major Singh. That's the list. And you got to navigate that. the divided between Democrats, Republicans, and no party preference. Oh, and Green Party Libertarians. One Libertarian. Wouldn't it be funny if the Libertarian won? They'd finally win something. You got a long list to navigate through. That's why Larry Elder suddenly has a potential edge. He's got high name ID being a radio show host in California, and he's on Fox News a lot. Kevin Falconer, the base of the Republican Party out there, appears to like him. But I want to focus on this piece by Sean Trendy because the Democrats have done something that actually works to their disadvantage. First of all, California, you should know, is far bluer than it was in 2003 in the Gray Davis race. Gray Davis was not only way more unpopular than Gavin Newsom is now, but California was leaned a little more Republican than it does now. So that's strike one against the recall happening. Strike two is the Republicans don't have someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger that they all rallied behind. They're deeply divided. You got John Cox, you got Kevin Falconer, you've got Larry Elder. But there are some things you need to consider now. And we shouldn't be dismissive of the recall, particularly if the polling is that close. There could be, as Sean Trendy points out, there could be a Brexit effect. You know, in Brexit, all of the polling suggested it was close, but not going to happen. And part of that was a lot of people said it wasn't going to happen or that they didn't support it because they just assumed it wasn't going to happen. Even if they were going to support yes, say yes, they assumed it wasn't going to happen. So they told pollsters no. Or they were scared or shy. They didn't want to admit that they supported Brexit because there was a deep campaign that if you supported it, you were somehow racist. In the same way with Donald Trump in 2016, a lot of people went into the polling and voted yes for Trump who told pollsters they were opposed to him. It's a pretty significant thing. So that could be happening with the recall. And now the Democrats in California have done something. They've decided to make it mail-in. Everybody's going to get a ballot. COVID regulations, you know, spreading to COVID, the Secretary of State's decided that everybody's going to get a ballot now. So it's not just you got to actually take the time to get out of your house and go to the polls. No, you're going to get a mail-in ballot. Everybody is. Sean Trendy pointed to the Literary Digest presidential poll of 1936. Now, some history here. The Literary Digest was kind of like the Reader's Digest of its day. It was a general interest magazine. It started in 1890, and it spread across America. In the 1920s, it had a lot of very famous paintings on the front page, and it was basically everyone read it. And in 1916, the Literary Digest started publishing polls to figure out who should be president of the United States. And guess what? The poll was always right. In each of the elections, the poll for the Literary Digest predicted the outcome. And then 1936 happened. In 1936, Alf Landon of Kansas was the winner of the poll, overwhelmingly so. And then FDR won 46 states. And it turned out that the Literary Digest was not looking at the right people. Literary Digest, in fact, was looking at well-to-do, educated Americans who read the Literary Digest, not looking at the run-of-the-mill factory workers in America who were sick and tired of what was going on in the country in the Great Depression. That was the year, 1936, by the way, that George Gallup began his polling and got it right and was able to reproduce the Literary Digest's results by showing that if you only sampled the rich white folks of America, you would have gotten Alf Landon. The Literary Digest went out of business shortly thereafter. Its credibility was destroyed. And that's very much something that Sean Trendy in his piece in Real Clear Politics focuses on. They're mailing everybody. They're mailing everybody. The people who are most invested in the recall are the people who hate Gavin Newsom. They're going to be the ones who are most likely to send the ballot back. Newsom's supporters may think, well, it's never going to happen. Let's not worry about it. Or they may say, the recall, such a dumb idea. They throw the ballot away. But it's the pissed off Republicans who are going to matter. and they could boot Gavin Newsom out because they're the ones most engaged. And then Sean Trinity points this out, and I just want to read this one to you. Any dispassionate analysis of the recall campaign must acknowledge that Gavin Newsom has problems. The Emerson College poll has his job approval at 48%, which, while not radioactive, puts him in a danger zone. The state is in the midst of an uptick in COVID cases, and some locales are reissuing mask mandates. That might combine with stories of Gavin Newsom's own children going maskless at summer camp and him hosting a dinner party at a time when Americans were being urged to skip holiday gatherings to create a plausible narrative of elite indifference to the plight of everyday Americans. The state remains vulnerable to blackouts, which was a hardship that hurt Gray Davis in 2003. In other words, the election increasingly does look like a real toss-up. Taking that, Newsom is still favored. Neither he nor President Biden is unpopular enough to lose. But against this analysis, the specter of Brexit looms large. The possibility of Governor Larry Elder seems so wildly implausible that it's difficult to call it as the likely outcome unless all evidence points in that direction. For now, though, the possibility is far more plausible that the recall succeeds than it was a few months ago. And he's right. When the California Secretary of State decided they were going to send mail-in ballots to everyone, that right there started throwing this thing away from Gavin Newsom, and his team knows it. And they're scrambling now to organize a ground game to go to people and try to get them to make sure they mail in their ballot. And he's got a problem. COVID is spreading. In the San Francisco and the Los Angeles areas, COVID is spreading again pretty rapidly. In Los Angeles, the local hospital system is beginning to get overwhelmed with COVID patients due to the Delta variant, and they're all vaccinated, or a lot of them are. The Hispanic migrant worker underclass is not, and they tend to be the bulk of the problems in hospitals in Los Angeles now. So Newsom actually has real trouble. And a mail-in ballot, the people who are most fired up are the ones who are going to use it, and those are the people who want the recall. And Larry Elder has higher name ID than Kevin Falconer right now. And the person with the highest name ID tends to win. So if it goes to a yes, recall him, people are going to seek out the name they recognize. And if it's Larry Elder, he becomes governor of California. Larry Elder has a real shot at becoming governor of California. Kevin Falconer does too, but Elder's got higher name ID. The advantage is still to Newsom. The advantage is still against a recall. People like the status quo, and California Democrats are dominant in the state. They outnumber Republicans significantly. So most likely it's a no. But there is a real possibility at this moment, more than there was a few months ago, that they actually get to yes in California, and you have the second governor recalled in California in less than 20 years. And it'll be because of Gavin Newsom telling people what to do about the virus and refusing to take his own advice. People rebelling against the elite, even in California, that can happen. Okay. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. So I have until this moment never heard of Kent Christmas. He's apparently a pastor in Nashville, Tennessee. Let us just play some of this, shall we?
And so you and I are coming to a place. This is why the Lord said, I'm coming to divide. I'm not coming to bring peace. I'm bringing a sword. Why? Because for there to be ultimate peace in the earth, there has to be a war in the spirit. And God needs some men and women in this hour that will quit laying down and copying out and saying, well, we're citizens, so we're just supposed to yield to every law that's passed. No, you're not.
Correct. Render to Caesar unto Caesars. Y'all should see this man's shirt. It looks like Picasso puked on it.
You are first held accountable to this book.
Yes.
The law of God supersedes the law of man.
Amen.
Just as the federal law is higher than the state law,
yep.
So is the law.
Except, wait. That's not exactly true. There's federalism. The feds can't do some things.
Of this book higher than the law that men pass in the halls of Congress. And so we have all of this argument about do we conform, do we not conform? It's really not that hard to figure out. Paul said it, be ye not conformed to this world,
okay,
to its system, to its ungodliness, but be ye transformed.
Okay.
I love my country. I love my president, Donald Trump.
What?
I love the Constitution of the United States of America. I feel it's an honor to be in this country.
Good.
I thank God for our policemen. I thank God for our armed forces. But my first allegiance will always be to the Lord Jesus Christ.
Okay, and?
And this is why history tells us the story of millions of men and women that have given their lives for the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Okay.
Because they would not recant on the name of Jesus.
Uh-huh.
And they would not yield to the laws of sin and to the laws of an ungodly ruler in order to continue to live. And they gave their lives for the gospel. We are coming into a season where God is asking us, who are we going to serve, the world or the Lord?
And then he went on to tell his audience that they should not take the COVID vaccine. They shouldn't abide by the vaccine mandates or COVID restrictions or will be held. Y'all, it's like the other guy. Come on now. I'm assuming he's a prosperity gospel minister. You know, you're not going to hell because you got a vaccine. I know there are people who think there's a microchip in the vaccine. By the way, how can there be microchips in the vaccine when there's a microchip shortage? I couldn't even get the precise vehicle I wanted because of the microchip shortage, because apparently they're all in vaccines now, and I'm trying to look for volunteers to use magnets to pull the vaccine, the microchips out of people from the vaccine so I can get my car, but nobody's volunteering. There are people who will use scripture for all sorts of things. It doesn't mean so. You know who also used scripture? The devil, when he tried to tempt Jesus. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Render to God what is God's. The vaccine? Nobody's making you. There are no vaccine mandates, except in some cases, and private employers can, and you don't have to work there. Now, I am opposed to vaccine mandates. I don't think anyone should be required to take a vaccine. I am sympathetic to employers like hospitals and the like expecting their employees to get the vaccine. But I think you got to give some religious exemptions to people who are concerned about it. I think you really do. But also there is this, you've got all these people who've been working in hospitals for a while. By the way, the hospital sector, contrary to what some people say, doctors and nurses are the most vaccinated group of people in America other than senior citizens. That is actually fact check true. But there are a lot of people who worked in hospitals, who are doctors and nurses, who didn't get the vaccine, who have not gotten COVID. And to make them now get the vaccine, I'm kind of opposed to forcing people to get this vaccine. I think people should get it voluntarily. I don't think you should force people to do it, because what happens is you foster greater resentment. You foster much greater resentment from people if you force them to get this vaccine. And they are more likely to have that resentment fester over time. We're living in a nation where the Democrats are fretting about the radicalization of people, and yet they're trying to force people to get a vaccine. What do you think that does? It radicalizes them further. It does. That's just the reality. I don't think anyone should be forced to get the vaccine in healthcare or out of healthcare. That being said, in a lot of states, if an employer tells you you got to, you got to. If you want to continue to work there. And you know what? If you don't, big job market right now. Lots of people are hiring, so you'll be able to land on your feet somewhere else. But I just don't think we should force mandates, mask mandates or vaccine mandates, frankly. Hi there. It is Eric Erickson here. Glad to have you with me. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. To the phones we go. I am going to go next to Linda. Linda, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate your program, and I listen to you every chance I get.
Thank you.
I wanted to tell you, my husband and I both are 75. We have had the Moderna vaccination, each both shots. We're both right now under 14 days of quarantine because we tested positive last week. But my point is, we don't know what's going to happen down the road. But when I was young, we had to have smallpox shots, and everybody had them. You had to have them to go to school. Okay, as you age, that virus is in you, and you are very apt to get shingles in later years. And also from the Spanish flu, it was about 10 years after that things started showing up as a result of the virus in the bodies. We don't know what's going to show up on this. And why not take the shots if it will help you maybe with something down the road?
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that perspective on it, Linda. Thank you very much for the call on that. And yeah, you're right. It does help build overall immunity. And frankly, given that COVID is also a SARS variant virus, like the common cold, who knows, maybe it'll help there. What we do know is, and you mentioned Moderna. I should mention, I got the Moderna, my wife and I both got Moderna from Publix, and we were both well past our second round. There is data out there from Moderna this morning showing that it is still highly effective against the Delta variant, 90% or so it appears, and that 6 months after you get it, it's still effective, and that those who contract the Delta variant who have the Moderna vaccine tend to have very minimal symptoms of the virus. What they are suggesting is a potential booster dose that would be a half to a quarter the size of the standard dose. I'd walk across the street to Publix this afternoon and get it if they'd let me, frankly. The vaccine does not scare me. I know it scares some people. And frankly, you know, Trump's Secretary of Health and Human Services said if they had to do it over again, they would not have called it Operation Warp Speed because it conveyed to people that they were cutting corners on the safety trials of the vaccine. And that's not really what it was. It was cutting some government red tape, but also expanding the pools of people. And just so you guys know here, I'm not making this up. I'm not trying to argue with you. I just so you have the information yourself. When they're producing a vaccine, the reason it can take 5 years for development or longer is because they have to test it in so many people. And they try to work in pools of a few thousand people at a time, and they try to spread it out. If you can get 10,000 people and you do it over 5 years, you've got 50,000 people over 5 years that can test the vaccine. They stop reviewing people after 6 months to a year because your side effects that you're going to get from a vaccine show up within the first 3 months. You don't, like, 5 years from now suddenly get a side effect from a vaccine. They show up within the first several months. But it takes time to develop a vaccine because the pool of available testers is so small. With the COVID vaccine, they had hundreds of thousands of people who were willing to test it. So instead of having to take 5 years to get 50,000 people test it, they got well over 100,000 people in 6 months as their testers. So again, the reason it takes so long to produce a vaccine and get it through the testing trials is not because they go slow. It's because they only have a limited number of people who volunteer to test, and it takes them several years to get a total number of people to test it to be able to review the effects. With the COVID vaccine, they had so many volunteers willing to test it, they were able to get through the pool they needed in that 6 months. It's not like I'm going to take these people and I'm going to give them the vaccine and I'm going to observe them now for the next 5 years. That's not the way it works. You observe them for 6 months. And so you've got five rounds of 10,000 people, is spread them out, and it takes you 5 years to do it and do the research and do the trials. Here you had 100, 200, 300,000 people around the world globally willing to volunteer at one time, and that's why they were able to speed it up. It had nothing to do with cutting corners. It had to do with the large pool of people able to test it at one time, and then the government cutting red tape through the process to be able to expedite the review once all the tests had been done. They weren't cutting out safety standards. And that's just important for everybody to understand here, because that's one of the things that I get from people a lot is why did they rush it? Why did they rush it? It's not safe. It's not. And that's actually a misconception. It's not that they rushed it. It's that it typically they need X number of people in order to test a vaccine across ethnic and demographic groups. And it usually takes about 5 years to get the pool of people needed. And here it took them the next day they had enough volunteers, and they observed them for that 6-7 months. And away they went with the manufacturing process because they were able to get it done. So I want you guys to understand that, just so you understand the actual truth of the matter asserted here. Now, I got to move on because, well, the car screw-up is coming. Let me set the stage for this. There's an automotive group in Atlanta. It's celebrating 50 years now. Jim Ellis Automotive. I have bought every car I have ever purchased new that's been a GM. I've got from Jim Ellis. I had a Toyota 4Runner, and I love my Toyota 4Runner, and I miss my Toyota 4Runner, but I have a wife and kids and a dog, and it was not big enough to fit my whole family. So I upgraded to a Chevy Tahoe, which I also loved. I've always loved Chevy Tahoes, but I moved to a GMC Yukon, and I liked the look a little better than the Tahoe. And I got the GMC Yukon from Jim Ellis, and then I got another one, and then I got another one, and now I've got another one. So my last four cars in a row have been GMC Yukon Denalis. My first one was actually part of an ad deal. I was going to do an endorsement, and then we decided not to go in that direction, but I got to buy the car from them, and I loved it, and I loved it. The only downside was it was white, and I've always had a white vehicle, but my wife and kids and producer jerk all like black vehicles, and they gave me a hard time. So when it was time to upgrade, I typically put about 100,000 miles on a car in 3 years. And with a Yukon Denali, I learned from Clark Howard, no less, that they tend to hold their value until they get to the 100,000 mile mark. And so you can sell them and get a pretty good return on your investment. So it was time to upgrade again. And there is a nationwide microchip shortage. And I wanted the Yukon Denali that is the ultimate package, which has an air suspension system in it. I really wanted it. Particularly because, like, with my parents come to visit, being able to lower the car down a little bit to be able to get them in and stuff. But because of the microchip shortage, they don't have any. So I got the next highest level. And the only regret I have about the vehicle, and it is so minor, is that it has the stupid auto start stop. Now, the Trump administration changed the rules, and you can right now buy a lot of vehicles that have it removed. If you are not familiar with the auto start stop, at least my car has a button where I can turn it off. A lot of the original cars, you couldn't even turn it off. You were stuck with it. The auto start stop is when you are at a stoplight and your car is idling, it turns off. And the cold air in your car in the south starts blowing warmer air until you take your foot off the brake. And when you take your foot off the brake, it cranks up. And the problem is that if you move your foot from your brake to the gas too quickly, stall your car for a second. Thankfully, I have a button in my car and I can push it and turn that off. I had a rental car in Florida back in March. It was a Ford and it didn't have the button. It just had the auto start stop. And it was the most annoying thing ever. In the Florida heat, stuck at a stoplight, and suddenly you're sweating because your air conditioner isn't running as cold as it should. And you got to take your foot off the brake, and it chugs and comes back to life, and it's horrible. But it's one of the standards that car makers had to do if you wanted to get a Yukon. If you had to get it, if you wanted a big car like mine, you had to get the auto start stop. The Obama administration made them. Well, the Biden administration is going further. The Biden administration is intent on screwing up car manufacturing in America. In fact, the Biden administration has been getting a lot of campaign donations from electric car manufacturers, and they are intending to push for 50% electric vehicle sales by 2030, 9 years from now. This is from the Washington Post. President Biden is set to unveil a far-reaching multi-pronged plan to make U.S. car and trucks more fuel efficient, and to begin a shift to electric vehicles over the coming decade. The move marks one of the administration's most consequential pushes so far to combat climate change and tackle the nation's biggest source of greenhouse gas emissions. The suite of new rules and mandates, forged after months of talks with car manufacturers, auto workers, and environmental groups, is meant to transform the kind of vehicles Americans drive and to reduce the country's reliance on fossil fuels. The move comes with political risks for Biden, who has faced pressure from activists and industry representatives alike, but represents a key part of his promise to try to slow rising global temperatures and propel the country forward. The president is set to sign an executive order calling for half of new car sales to be of electric vehicles powered by batteries and fuel cells or plug-in electric hybrids by the end of the decade. Leaders from auto companies and labor unions are expected to join him in the White House, according to senior administration officials. In the near term, the EPA and Transportation Department were also set to propose new requirements on greenhouse gas emissions and fuel efficiencies for cars, SUVs, and pickup trucks through model year 2020. In the name of global warming, the Biden administration is going to screw up our vehicles. The auto stop-start feature is one of the worst designed features. They're going to have to make cars even lighter than they are right now, and they may actually wind up getting to a point where they can't even build big trucks and SUVs like my Yukon, because the Biden administration is intent on forcing us into smaller, lighter vehicles for fuel efficiencies. Now, the Washington Free Beacon has this. The executive order that Biden is going to sign to do this will rely on commitments from General Motors and Ford, as well as Stellantis NV, Chrysler's parent company. Executives at the companies have tied the 50% target for electric vehicles before 2030 to the Senate's more than $1 trillion infrastructure bill, which will provide federal funding for manufacture and research, as well as a network of electric charging vehicle stations. Biden administration officials have been criticized in recent months for cozying up to electric vehicle manufacturers. The Washington Free Beacon reported in June that former Vice President Al Gore lobbied the administration to include green energy priorities in the infrastructure proposal. Some have personally profited from the arrangement. The Energy Secretary, Jennifer Granholm, earned $1.6 million after selling her shares in the electric bus maker Proterra. The president and vice president have touted the green company while promising to fund infrastructure. I don't care if you want an electric vehicle. Good for you. I don't. I don't want an electric vehicle because I can get in my Yukon Denali. I can drive halfway or further to my parents in Louisiana. I can spend 10 minutes filling it up and get back on the road and make it to my parents. If I have a Tesla, I have to stop in multiple places along the way and wait 30 minutes with a supercharger, assuming there's a spot available for it to charge. It slows us down. And I don't want to get in a train and have to rent a car when I get there. I want my car with my family and my dog in my car. What the Biden administration is doing is fundamentally transforming America the way Democrats want. And I think there's going to be backlash. And by the way, there's a side negative to this. Electric vehicles require fewer parts, and the assembly line is shorter. So by moving to electric cars, Joe Biden is going to be putting a lot of people out of work in states that he won from Trump. Joe Biden is going to cause an unemployment crisis in the manufacturing, auto manufacturing industry by forcing people into electric cars, because a lot of those jobs on the assembly line are going to go away. Do you really think GM and Ford are going to find new places for those people? Of course not. Of course not. So he's going to force on Americans cars they don't want using federal infrastructure, going to cause a new environmental problem with the search for lithium, and by the way, will be more dependent on China because of it, and he's going to cause mass unemployment. But hey, the Democrats will sleep well at night on their private jets thinking they've solved the environmental crisis. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I gotta, y'all on the line, y'all be patient with me, because this is too good to pass up, and I gotta get this. Who is this guy? Kevin McCallum. There's an indoor gun range that has opened in Vermont. And Vermont has a lot of outdoor gun ranges, and you're supposed to be members of them. This is the first indoor gun range. My favorite gun range that I go to, it's called Shots, but it's over in Carrollton, Georgia, where my in-laws live. There are a lot of great gun ranges, but I go over to my in-laws a lot, and this one's just down the street from them. It's fantastic. They've got multiple lanes and distances, and they've got a 100-yard lane underground for long barrel guns, and I love that place. The people there are fantastic. They got great selection, and I love to go shoot guns. Well, this reporter has gone, Kevin McCallum. He got an AR-15. While the pistol was manageable, even comfortable to hold and fire, the rifle was a different beast altogether. Everything about it, its weight, tactical scope, and overall lethality was downright intimidating. The fact that the first magazine refused to click into place didn't help either, unnerving me. What if I just broke a $3,500 rifle? A fresh magazine worked just fine, though, and after loading it, I sent the target out to 15 yards. When ready, I lined up the target in the crosshairs, pulled the stock onto my shoulder, squeezed the trigger, and ba-boom! It's difficult to describe the impact, physical and personal, of that first shot. It felt like a meteor had struck the earth in front of me. A deep shockwave coursed through my body, the recoil rippling my arm and right shoulder with astonishing speed. Being that close to an explosion of such magnitude rattled me. I never got comfortable firing it. I'm not sure what scared me more, the power of the weapon or the fact that I could have taken it home that day. Oh my gosh. Good gracious. Wow. All right, y'all, I got to tell you about this great deal from Omaha Steaks, and can I just brag about them real quick with the bacon wrap fillets? First, let me tell you, go to omahasteaks.com and put Eric in the search bar, and you can get their summer grill package. Their bacon wrap fillets, y'all, I adore these things, and I order them by my just standalone. You can get them in the summer grill package. You get four of them, and I put them off on the side of the grill that's not lit. I'll let the bacon get crispy on the heat that's circulating in the grill from the side that's on high, and then I throw them over there to sear them, and they're perfect, and they're delicious, and you can get them from omahasteaks.com. You put Eric in the search bar. Not only that, they're going to give you eight burgers made from filet mignons. Fantastic stuff here. And you get boneless pork chops and boneless, skinless chicken breasts. You get caramel apple tartlets. You get a ton. It's $99.99, which is about 59% savings. You can't go to a grocery store and get this amount or this quality for that price. Go to omahasteaks.com. Put Eric, E-R-I-C-K, in the search bar. You'll see a little drop down. It'll say Eric Erickson. Click it. Get the summer grill package. Get those bacon wrap fillets and the free eight free burgers that made from fillets.